Dear Shooter, do you ever hear suppressors decrease your range? Suppressors impact your accuracy. Storing loaded magazines wear out the springs. Let's discover why no myths are safe.
But they did state that when these guns are put together with different pieces or whatever, it's like an organ transplant.
Yeah, no. I got an F in shooting once.
It's a perishable skill.
Quitting?
Yes. My favorite death threat I ever got, the guy left his email address on.
He's just going to make it rain in Spanish, that's all.
Here's 20 cents. Wow, you just made that
clip on. It's not a strap on.
2 weeks for all that? That isn't training, that's camp.
You couldn't read a brochure on all that shit in that time.
Prepare to enter the space where nothing is safe, nothing is sacred, and offensive conversation is encouraged. Welcome to the Dear Shooter Podcast and your hosts, Jason Wilson, Brandy, and Jason Croteau.
Well, happy Thursday, and welcome to spring in Wyoming. We're just about the time that the range dries out, it snows again.
It's going to tonight.
Dude, it's springtime. The weather doesn't even know what it's going
to
do.
Oh, God.
It was like 60 today, and we're expecting 4 to 8 inches tonight into tomorrow.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
I don't know. The mummy is coming over the mountains.
Yeah. When you look at the mountains, and they're starting to disappear, and it's turning black.
It's pretty ominous looking that way, that's for sure.
But it's weird, because our little valley here, for whatever reason, it seems to just go on either side, and we are spared. Everywhere else is crap, but we're fine.
Not at my house. I get it. Every little time it looks like it's going to do something, it hits.
Well, that's because God hates golf course.
It's true.
And he knows you love hot tub time.
I'm stubborn enough just to sit, too, even when it is crappy outside.
Right. So, before we get into the meat of it, number one, Mr. Wilson, what is the deadline for people to get their votes in for the NRA board?
I do believe that is going to be like the 5th or the 10th of April. It's coming up.
Yeah.
If you've got a ballot in a magazine because you're a voting member, fill that thing out.
Yep.
Because it's not postmarked by. It's literally in their
received pitties. Received by is how it's furbished.
And we know the Postal Service is not the quickest entity any
that
longer.
That is correct.
Right. So make sure we vote. We have got to get the ship righted over there at the NRA. And the only way to do that is to get in all these reform candidates.
I have been fielding a lot of phone calls about the elections. And the people that are calling they're on board with changing things up and getting it back to where it belongs.
Good.
So,
I mean, we need that 800-pound gorilla. We really do. GOA has been doing well at stepping up. But at the end of the day, we need the NRA.
It's an American icon. Mm-hmm. And it stands on principle, or should, on one item.
Right.
One topic alone. We don't get lost in the weeds over any other thing. One thing alone.
Right.
Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm. Which protects all of them.
That's correct.
So, yes, get out and vote. Get it done. Last week, actually, Tuesday of last week, was the official kickoff of the PDN training tour for this year. So that's up and going. And I've got a lot of stuff. I'm doing a lot of collaboration with a couple of other instructors on the tour. Got Barrett Kendrick of Bearco Training coming out to do a pistol class. I'm working with Clayton Slosher of Pivotal Defense. I've got him coming out. We're going to do a carbine pistol combined with a TAC-MET.
Interesting. Aren't you bringing folks from Mexico out?
I'll have the guys from Mexico out here in the middle of May.
Okay.
Going to Mexico in the middle of May. So I think we're going to catch each other in the airport.
Yikes. that'll be really good for kicking off your season, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, season kicks off here in like 3 weeks. I'm doing my first class, the 14th of April.
Where?
It's going to be in Afton, Wyoming, Star Valley area.
Interesting.
So we're working with an indoor range over there. That's Wild Wyoming Outfitters.
Interesting corner of the state over there. It's a bunch of ranchers, but most of the folks are transplanted and well-to-do.
They are, and that area is stunningly beautiful.
And if the wind blows hard enough, they end up in Idaho. So, you know, it's that close.
No, it's blowing the other direction. Idaho's blowing.
Depends on which the mountain. It can't go anywhere.
Depends on which politician speaking.
That's true. There is that. True. But no, I'm excited for that one. And I see great things to come working with Wild Wyoming and with their range and the people that they've got over there. The nice thing about it is not only do we have that Star Valley area that we're drawing people from, but that also allows us to serve eastern Idaho.
Well, good. There is a mountain range as a barrier, so getting over there would be kind of a new market for you.
It will. I'm going to be crashing Chris Costa's area.
Good. Someone needs to.
So that'll be interesting. I'm curious to see how long it takes before he and I bump into each other.
That former operator, cowboy, trash panda needs some competition. Yes, I said it out loud.
All right.
And he has my business card, so call me Chris if you'd like.
That's total visual. We may need a photo of that.
We can probably figure that out.
Just get on his Instagram.
It's there, I'm pretty sure.
But I want him trash pandaed.
He's a card-carrying furry.
Oh, God.
You watched CSI recently. I know you know what that means.
Some things are just, I don't need to visualize it.
Tee.
So, what you got for us today?
Well, we have the suppressor talk, and it's an interesting time this is coming up because last year at the Night Force ELR, most of them did not use a suppressor. Most of them were on a break because of these little items here.
And
you
they
know,
were probably running MOA scopes, too.
No. But, you know, the whole suppressors are going to decrease your range, and they affect your muzzle velocity, and they affect your accuracy. And
well, hold on. They do actually affect your muzzle velocity. But
yes,
they,
but they're taking it poorly, not...
Yeah, it'll increase.
Well, it doesn't take but one internet troll to kind of spoil some good information. And there's a little nugget of truth in each one of these little bitty myths out there, but it doesn't apply to the overall truth of the discussion. Suppressors, they will change your POI, your point of impact. They
yes.
just will.
But it's
predictable.
Not like, exactly. And it's not, it's a fixed shift.
Correct.
Right. So, yes, your point of impact may change up to, you know, maybe a minute or
well,
so.
Well, I'm sorry. Don't you zero your firearm with everything on it? It's not like you zero your firearm and then stick your scope on it.
Well, typically,
you couldn't
yeah.
be more right. You're absolutely correct. And the degree of impact shift varies by manufacturer of suppressor. The way the baffle's designed and the way the end cap's designed plays heavily into how much that gets shifted.
Well, and the ammo is going to affect that too.
Absolutely.
You know,
will.
How good is your ammo? Because if your ammo, if you're it, without, okay, so regardless of the suppressor, right? If you've got if you're running ammo with an SD of 50, you're probably going to get much more change with a suppressor.
If you've got SDs of 50, the suppressor shift is the least of your worries.
Right.
And that lies the under discussion here is we're getting to is because with all the variables that there are in rifle accuracy, mm-hmm. pinning it down to one thing over another, calling it a major contributor and switching gear because of it is ignorant.
Yes.
Now, I don't mean ignorant in the I don't want you dating my daughter ignorant. I mean it is you just don't have all the information and facts to make an informed decision.
Well, typically, that's what we do when we do the long-range classes, and we have a student that's having problems. The thing that we do is we start to isolate every variable that we have any control over.
Correct.
Because that's how we diagnose what's going on.
That's correct.
And just shooting in general. Now, to be fair, shooting a pistol, there are so many more variables that you can't really isolate because of the way you're shooting. All of those things are working in conjunction. You know, I can't sit there and isolate somebody's trigger because they still have to hold on to the gun, right?
Agreed.
So, but with a rifle, it's much more easy to isolate variables.
Absolutely correct. And you start looking at suppressors and how they affect projectile flight. I spent some time in the past couple of weeks reading some of Brian Litz's documents on what he's observed from a laboratory perspective of this.
So did you have trouble sleeping? Is that what's going on?
I did, actually, and it solves it quite nice. That man is I don't know if he's just that walking encyclopedia or if he researches it, writes it down, and forgets it, but either way, great information.
Oh,
and he approaches it from a scientific method.
Right.
So you look at how a suppressor does what it does by making the report of the muzzle quieter, mm-hmm. right? You're managing expansion of gases. The big boom you hear when your rifle goes off is the gases breaking the sound barrier, right? And what a suppressor does is it traps and contains those gases. Now, that process is going to create what we call as back pressure. Those, if you've ever run them on a gas gun, you know exactly what we're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Back pressure, or you wish you had a piston instead of a gas impingement system.
Right.
But that back pressure can foul the ballistics tune of that rifling and the bullet leaving the barrel. It can. Extremely likely that it's so nominal that the human perception of it would be imperceivable.
Right.
So you might be talking about a 2 or 3 feet per second loss in some models. In some models, it's up to 30 feet per second faster with
right.
the suppressor on it.
Right.
It will change whatever happens at the muzzle because it extends the muzzle and is designed specifically to modify how the gas escapes the barrel.
But, all right, so as long as, though, you install the suppressor, you zero it, you collect all of your data, you do all of these things with the suppressor on, and you're going to go and you're going to hunt or you're going to go to your competition or do whatever you're going to do, as long as that suppressor is in place, your performance is going to match what you did at the bench.
Correct. You've made it part of your test subject as far as your data goes.
Right. So it's not like you're changing things. Once you put the suppressor on, like it's going to be a variable every time. That's not
right.
how that works.
And we watched the downrange ballistics of rifles with suppressors versus rifles without, and they're about 40% more consistent with a suppressor because of all the human things that the suppressor helps mitigate.
Right.
Flinching, so sound sensitivity, recoil sensitivity, all of those things. When the activity of shooting is more pleasant, those bad habits start to fade away.
Well, that's something I don't think gets talked about enough is, you know, we talk about the decibel reduction with suppressors and making shooting hearing safe, but you don't hear a lot about the actual recoil reduction. A lot of these suppressors are like 40-50% recoil reduction.
Absolutely right, which induces good habits to be fostered because you're not fighting the gun anymore out of a flinch or a spot of fear.
Right.
And yes, guys, if you shoot the big boomers, eventually you either develop a bad habit or you never had one to begin with. Suppressors, at the end of the day, do make the shooting process a lot more accurate. And if you shoot with it consistently, your data is normalized to it.
Right.
So this discussion point as a suppressor being a negative thing is false.
I think people put the suppressor on. They've zeroed their gun before. They got the brand new suppressor. They put it on. It changed the impact. And like you said, some suppressors can increase your velocity, and they talk about that, which it changes the ballistic curve then because it results in a slightly flatter trajectory and potentially less wind drift. So it will change downrange as you go.
And all of those things you just talked about are for the better of the overall experience of long-range shooting.
Right.
But it did make a change. And so if you're looking at what your rifle did with and without it, that's apples and oranges.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bad comparison. Don't do it.
Right. Well, you can't. Because you're exactly right. What the performance is without the suppressor suppressor is going to change that. But as long as you document that, and that's why, you know, we push, you know, maintain your data books.
Dude, but outside you and me, I don't know that anybody actually uses data books, and they should.
Well, that's because they've all the new apps and everything. You don't have to anymore.
Yeah, it gives you a spot in the moment, like right now. But what happened 3 weeks ago? And you had a really good day, and then you can't shit in a bathtub today. Going back and looking at that's not going to be in your app.
No, it's not.
It's just going to say you suck.
Yeah, less.
Yeah, exactly. Suck less. No, I think you're absolutely right. Because to me, I'm to the point now, like, I don't even like to shoot unsuppressed. Pistols, okay, fine. But if I'm behind a rifle, I want a can.
I'll be honest. If I can suppress a pistol, I will, too.
Well, I can.
I mean, it's not exactly conceal friendly.
No.
I know my.
I like the shooting.
You got to wear your
better.
MC Hammer pants.
You should see my 22 pistol with the suppressor on it. It's got quite the barrel now.
Yeah, I'll bet.
I'll bet. It is quiet,
and it's what you want for around the home.
Mm-hmm.
You have neighbors; they're not real close, but you have them.
No, and while our neighbors, if we have to go shoot something, they don't care. Typically, they're shooting a text over, hey, did you get it? What was it? Do you need help? But if we can be kind to our neighbors and shoot things suppressed when we have to go and knock out a few roosters or a raccoon or a fox or something, or
like
ravens.
Yesterday it was ravens, and honestly, being quieter when I'm taking that out, I'm taking out in the middle of my herd.
That's right.
So, I have chickens, and I have all my little creatures are in one little pasture, and,
well,
the quiet is helpful.
You don't want to be any more intrusive than you have to be.
No, and going out and taking a problem like that suppressed, being quiet, especially when you have, because like you had, what, two ravens yesterday?
Yeah, they were attacking chickens.
You don't want to spook the one. You want to get them both.
That's right. So what else did they say outside accuracy issues and muzzle velocity, which we've kind of debunked already, but what else did they say?
Yeah, that's most of the article, how it changes. Also, your results will vary on ammunition type, which we have already hit. So it says subsonic ammunition does travel slower than standard.
It's really, really quiet.
But
now
that
you talk
is,
about a data change.
Yeah, but that is property of the ammunition itself and not the limitation imposed by the suppressor.
Correct.
Because your little escapade yesterday made me decide to go do a little experiment with a 22, with my 22 rifle. I threw a suppressor on it, went out, and when I had, normal 22 ammunition, just 22 long rifle, from inside the building, you guys could hear the pop.
Correct.
But when I changed to subsonics, you heard nothing.
Nothing at all.
And even being behind the gun, all I could hear was the action cycle.
Right. But you look at a performance change on that, that's a dramatic night and day shift. And if you're going to shoot subsonics, you had better understand the limitations of that.
Well, I mean, especially with a 22, I mean, I'm looking for predator control inside of about 25 yards.
You sure be capable with 22 and subsonics at that, 25 yards?
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't reach more than 50,
probably
on something
not.
Lethal. I'd shoot cans for fun, but I don't know that I'd try and kill something.
Well, when it's in season and the pheasants fly over to our pasture for safety, I can pick them off.
Sure.
So basically, at the very end of this, dear shooter, don't believe everything you see on TV or read on the internet, because it says the myths surrounding these devices largely stem from Hollywood and media portrayals and misunderstandings.
I see you quoted Abraham Lincoln on that. Don't believe everything you hear on the internet.
Yeah.
He did say that, didn't he?
He did.
I think I caught the last part of him on Joe Rogan.
Well, let's pay some bills and we'll come back and we're going to talk about magazines.
Beans, bullets, Band-Aids, and booze. While everyone forgets about the last one, 10th Mountain has you covered. With a range of whiskey, vodka, and cordials, you're sure to find just the right spirit for your next adventure. Just remember to flip up your nods before you take a sip. Now shipping orders to nearly every US state so you can get in on the awesomeness. enter Deer Shooter at checkout for 15% off your order. 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirits Company. Whiskey worth fighting for.
Are you fed up with paying premium prices for mediocre performance? It might be time to up your game with Lucid Optics. Lucid Optics delivers world record-setting performance without breaking the bank. From long-range precision, hunting application, and the first-ever reflex optic in blue, your mission won't be compromised. Lucid Optics are built tough as nails for the most demanding situations, using ED shot glass to ensure your view is crystal clear and backing it up with a lifetime warranty. To learn more, ask your dealer or go to lucidoptics.com. Lucid Optics. On target. Under budget.
So, Lucid got any good sales going on right now?
We haven't really started the whole springtime madness stuff yet. We're going to get through a couple shows and we'll see where our inventory sits and see how things need to roll. But there is a wide plethora of crap out there on sale. I mean, we would be just added to the sea of randomness at this point.
That's right. You do have a show coming up this weekend.
Yeah, we're going to go visit Mule Deer Days down in Rock Springs.
So if anybody listening, if you're around the Rock Springs area, go check out the Muley Days show.
Yeah, come see us. We'll have a deal or two at the table.
There you go. And I've been to that show, and they make deals.
We do. We totally do.
So, magazines.
What type of magazines?
Well, wait.
These aren't like the nudie magazines.
No.
I'm out.
Yeah, of course you are.
Well, it depends on what you're loading into those. Okay. Anyway. So, the question is, will storing magazines loaded wear out the springs? And so,
spring tension fable.
You guys say what you want to say, and if you don't touch on this, I'll tell you what they say.
So the idea, as I understand the myth around magazines being loaded and stored that way, is over time you compress the spring and it's less reliable for the rounds to be pushed out through the action cycling. I have never experienced an issue due to this phenomenon. And I have had some magazines loaded for a couple years. They function and cycle just fine. What else are they saying that is contributing to the reason why not?
Well, hang on. Because my understanding of this, and I've heard this several times from several different resources, that it's the loading and unloading, it's the constant compression expansion of the spring that wears it out. But if you just store a loaded magazine, it's that constant tension is not going to do it any harm. It's the people that they load all their magazines and then when they get home, they unload them all the time. You know, that it's that constant loading and unloading that wears the springs out.
From a metallurgical standpoint, I can actually see a correlation between exactly what you're saying. A spring's a wire, right? Mm-hmm. And you take it and you bend it back and forth. What happens to that wire?
It breaks eventually.
It becomes brittle and breaks, right? So I can see that the constant in and out would be that same. These springs are a lot longer than the box that they're put into,
mm-hmm.
and they're designed very specifically to hold that tensile for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Picatinny Arsenal holds loaded magazines in their loadout kits for deployments for 10 years. They use their magazines in that time frame, but they see the magazine as a disposable piece of equipment.
I agree with that. I've always felt magazines are one of those expendable items because typically most malfunctions that we see, I would say probably northward of 85-90% are magazine related.
Right.
So you get a magazine that keeps fouling and you get rid of that magazine. That's why I number mine.
Well, and you look at the guys that use them probably harder than anybody else. If you're deployed in a forward base, and you have to go on mission, you run that magazine empty, you eject it, reload, and move on.
And you're probably not picking up your magazines when you're done.
You're not saying, hey, bad guys, wait a second, I got to pick up my magazine.
Right.
No, you're leaving it on the ground where it laid. But my point is, Picatinny Arsenal stores those things for a decade loaded.
Yeah. I keep most of mine loaded.
They call it a 30-round magazine, but they only load them 28.
Well, that's because they're not strong enough to put it up against a closed bolt.
Some magazines with the followers and the springs won't cycle that first round if they're loaded to the top.
Now, that's typically the old GI magazines. You don't see that issue with Magpuls.
So they did say the constant loading and unloading fatigues the spring over time, and they compare that to your car suspension. Your car suspension is constantly under pressure, and when you park the car, it doesn't affect your suspension. But if you drive over rough terrain all the time, bouncing up and down, that's what gets your suspension. So it's the unloading and reloading consistently that grabs your spring. The other one is like poor quality springs. So your aftermarket magazines, your cheaply made magazines.
And that's a double-edged sword. We just talked about it being a disposable piece of kit. Running out and buying the highest end spring, the best magazine out there, you will have less problems. But if for a piece of disposable kit, you got to wonder how much is that worth dollar-wise?
I guess it depends, because your competitors will always pick up their magazines. At least every competition I've been in, they pick up their magazines at the end of the round. So maybe military doesn't care, but your competitors reuse and your hunters reuse.
Back to application orientation. We talk about this all the time. What are you going to use it for? I mean, if it's a safe queen and a range trophy, kind of do what you want. If you're defending your life with it, no, you're probably not going to pick that thing up. But if you're a competitor, it's a thing you're going to use and use and use a lot. So choose wisely.
So I just, out of curiosity, I just jumped onto Midway USA's website. And a rebuild kit for a magazine, which includes the follower, the base plate, and the spring. Now, these are for GI magazines, the aluminum ones. But it's $13.
Okay.
To get just the spring. Now, and this is a tub speed lock. So this is a higher-end spring. For a 30-round AR magazine, you're looking at $16.19. You know, if you're worried about it, you know, spend $40, have three or four springs on hand. I mean, I carry them because people on my, you know, people that come to class or whatever, I need to be able to address issues like that.
And by the same token, I was just on MLN's little newsletter. Mm-hmm. And I can buy 20 GI mags, and they're $7 a piece. That's a full mag for spring, follower, bottom plate, the whole kit.
Yeah.
So replacing a spring for $13 seems silly.
Agreed. Now, you are talking the aluminum GI magazines.
That's right.
And there, I think there's some people anymore that just, they're like, oh, I wouldn't use that. I still have a ton of them.
They work and just fine.
Yeah. Now, I will say that if I'm going to go with a metal magazine, I would rather go steel than aluminum, because I learned over time that, you know, when you're out of the range, you drop a mag, you step on it, whatever. The steel ones, you can kind of reshape and redo the feed lips and make them run again. The aluminum ones, not so much.
Agreed. But again, it's disposable.
Okay, the other reason to fail, corrosion and rust. Storing magazines in humid or salty environments without proper maintenance can lead to rust.
Yeah, we don't have to worry about that here.
We don't have to, but, you know, your California, your Oregon,
your springs are going to be steel, so they're prone to this. Mm-hmm. A GI mag, aluminum one, it's not going to corrode the outside. The can's not. A steel can will. Now, the polymer mag, the only thing in that that has a problem is going to be the spring.
Right.
Well, this one does say polymer feed lip deformation.
Yeah, so depending on the make, I have had a variety of, between Magpul, Hexmag, Olight, whoever was making them, that flavor of the month. And all those plastic designs are not equal.
No.
The most reliable is the Magpul, and they have specific reinforcings of specific areas, and their followers actually ride a groove all the way down the magazine. So, the polymer ones, be careful what you buy, because you can induce a problem with a cheap mag.
Mm-hmm. And I've found I've probably played with four or five different brands, and if I'm going to spend money on it, it's going to be a Magpul. I've found those to be absolutely the most reliable.
I would agree.
So in this, they have a quote from Marine Recon Sniper and Mechanical Engineer Chet Peters. He says, spring steel is made of a very specific alloy called music wire, and it is designed to stay in a permanent state of stress. Yes, you should leave your magazines loaded. The act of loading and unloading is actually worse for your magazine.
I agree with him, mm-hmm. 100%. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're going to store them, storm loaded.
Metal versus polymer magazines, which are better for long-term storage?
I'd have to say the polymer in the long run is probably better. All things being equal from the spring and follower standpoint.
How do you store yours?
I load them to 28 rounds and I stack them. I got a shelf in my gun safe that holds 91 of them.
Okay.
And the one is just because I don't have any more in the stack room, and it lays out there in front because it's my easy grab.
Okay, so this one is it says use ammo cans for magazine storage because the military-style metal ammo cans are an excellent choice for keeping loaded magazines safe. They seal well and are stackable.
Well, they're also extremely waterproof. Mm-hmm. They have a tension lid on them that has an O-ring. It's a great storage solution for a lot of things. Mm-hmm. You got me one Christmas a plastic box that had a foam insert where I could store mags.
MTM.
Yeah, actually, that's a pretty good solution, too.
I like them.
They go into the MTM for the lighter option than ammo boxes. So the foam inserts, they keep the magazines organized and upright, and they control humidity.
Now, the foam inserts are separate from each other by about 3/8 of an inch. So it does limit how much you can put in the box. But that separation, I think, at the end of the day, probably does keep them a little bit safer.
It does, and I think the one that MTM has. Now, the ones that I have, I think they run, I want to say there's 10 AR magazines and like 8 pistol magazines in each box. Now, I have seen them that I think they're 20 AR magazines in the box. Typically, what we see is that most people, and I say most because you and I are kind of on the fringe. I bet I've got 60, 70 AR magazines running around.
I've got that many in my truck.
Yeah. But typically what we see is most people have somewhere between 5 and 10 magazines, if they even have that many.
Yeah, I've got console in my truck, the door panel in my truck, glove box. I think I've even got one in a sunglasses hidey hole. I've got them everywhere.
He has a 9mm one because he was crossing state lines inside of a toilet paper tube inside his glove box.
God, I did have one in there.
Yeah, California. I was stashing stuff. It was like trying to hide drugs across the border because it was one of those things where. So I had to go. I was doing an event in Southern California in San Diego. But as soon as I left there, I had to go to Reno to do a carbine course. And let's face it, California's silly, and nothing that I had was California compliant. Had I gotten pulled over and searched, you guys would probably still be, I would be doing this show from prison.
You don't have a latex allergy, do you?
No.
Good.
Tee. So, for those of you who live in humid environments, they do have what they call an EvaDry mini dehumidifier. Mm-hmm. It's great for your small safes and cabinets. They're wireless and last for years.
They make them in all sizes, too, depending on what size of safe you got. They got them for all. But the dehumidifying crystal pack that you find in toys and electronics and stuff like that, they are a really good option to throw in your range bag.
I use them. I actually use them in my safes. I have bigger packs. They're maybe the size of a small rear bag. Mm-hmm. And I just drop those in the bottom of my safes. And then every couple of years, you just run them through the microwave for like 5 seconds, and it recharges them.
Really?
Yep.
Microwave. I had no idea.
I didn't either. And the first I was really nervous the first time I tried it. But they're like 5-6 seconds is all it takes. And it just sucks all the moisture out.
Oh, but then.
But they work great, and I've had them in my safes for years. Now, granted, the environment we live in, we are drier than a popcorn fart. I'm not worried about humidity.
No, humidity is not our issue. Now, Houston, anywhere in Florida, yeah, that becomes a problem.
Yep.
And they also mention a goldenrod dehumidifier rod. Keeps mm-hmm. the air inside your safe warm and dry.
Sure.
Interesting.
Yep. Warm is interesting.
You don't want that to malfunction, though, because it will burn a nice wood finish. Ask me how I know.
So they also say, even though leaving magazines loaded isn't a problem, you should still inspect them periodically. Every few months, just do a quick check, ensure your springs are functioning, look for rust, dirt, and debris, wipe down metal mags with a light coat of oil.
Yeah, it's not a bad plan. I mean, shoot them. Take right. them out and use them.
Right. Yeah, because typically I have to come back. If I'm working on a dirt range, I've got to come back and take my mags apart and clean them because I've got dirt and grit and all kinds of stuff in them. So it's part of the process of just maintaining equipment.
Agreed.
So, and even the polymer mags, I have to do that. If I'm running a carbine course on a dirt range, yeah, I got to take my mags apart and get all the grit and dirt out of them.
And you start with an air hose, and then you disassemble, and then you wipe. Mm-hmm. Yep, it's a process.
Yep, and I use a Swiffer.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
That probably worked just fine.
It works great. And then light coat of oil, and if I'm really nervous about it, I'll use lithium grease on the spring.
That probably makes them run a little quieter, too.
It does, and that's actually what I used to use on my buffer springs until I went to hydraulic buffers.
Have you ever run those in the cold yet?
Not crazy cold. Probably down to 10 degrees.
Yeah. Minus 30, your gun won't run.
Okay, good to know.
Like we go out and go, hey, I'm going to go out to the range in minus 30.
Well, in my coyote gun, I've got one in the chamber. And I'll hop out and sometimes connect with the coyote, sometimes not. But that second one doesn't like to cycle because my gun is really slow. So I went back to regular springs and my coyote guns.
Oh, well, fair enough. But that's in deer shooter. This is what we're here for. That's something that's really good to know. I hadn't thought about that because typically, I mean, I like the hydraulic buffers. Number one, because it's quieter. You don't get that twang in your ear. And I think that the gun actually cycles more reliably. There's a recoil reduction.
Oh, they're super nice. Don't get me wrong.
I did not know about the cold thing. But then again, I hadn't run it that cold.
In my bougie range gun, I have hydraulics. Because you're right. They run smoother. They are nicer. They are quieter. In my coyote gun, it is old school.
Good to know. So, wow. We kind of flew through all that.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at the clock here, going, "Wow, we're done."
Wow. Right?
We have to shut up and let people go to work now.
Oh boy. So, all right. If you must.
So I guess. Wow. Until next week, get your votes into the NRA. Get signed up for a class this year. Check out Personal Defense Network. Look for the training tour. Look for the courses. I think there's like 13 instructors that are participating in the tour this year. So there's going to be classes going on all over the country. You will find what you're looking for there. And until next week, I guess, let's see. Are we blaming suppressors or magazines?
Magazines. Blame the magazines.
Blame the magazine.